saying, because the Jehovah's come to my house and I entertain them all the time. And, you know, they keep coming back. They give me books. I mean, I talk to them for an hour because I'll talk to anybody and debate and, you know, try to understand myself where they're coming from and hopefully they'll understand me. But one time they kept coming back and I said, look, you need to talk to me from inside yourself. Don't quote from the book. Don't turn through the pages. Don't give me this other book. I want you to tell me what you feel and think. And they couldn't do it. You know, and I've had that happen several times. You know, and they're always quoting from the different things, but they don't understand what they're quoting. I don't think they really think and bring in what they're reading into their heart and soul. You know, it's sort of like soulless religions.
Well, we're not talking about heart and soul here.
No.
We're talking about the mind.
I guess so, in a sense, mind control, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the heart doesn't think, doesn't have a brain. But
right.
The mind, you're supposed... See, you have three aspects. You have the Oyandara, Oranda, Onigunga. Now, the Oyandara is your body, which is the vessel. Oranda is your energy. And Onigunga is the mind that can... That controls everything. And that's, we grow up asking questions. We're supposed to. The children are supposed to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
We always say there are two questions, no matter what anybody says to you, there are two questions you have to ask. You ask why, that's number one. The second question is, can you prove that? And you will get a very good education if you raise your kids that way.
Those are my two favorite questions.
That's right. And here they tell you to shut up, and here we're telling our kids to ask those questions.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the beginning right there. And people never really ask why; they just accept. You know.
And then they stole them in these residential schools. Did all kinds of experiments on them, killed them. Half of them were killed, by the way. Died.
How many do you think died in the residential schools over the history of?
Well, we have a figure that they, you know, definite figures there. Of there's probably a lot more than that, but out of 100,000, 55,000 of them were killed or never came back. I'm not saying they were killed. I'm saying that they never came back.
And do you think a majority of that was in the earlier years, like when it first started?
Well, the one that I was telling you about
was in 1943.
So
yes.
I don't know if you call that earlier.
They started
the residential schools in the early 1800s.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking about... by 1850, it was well on, and our population went down because of it. Because when I was a little kid living here, I went to school. I was 6 years old. I could only speak Mohawk. But the first thing they taught us, they gave us a book, and I remember that book very well. And it was had a blue cover on it with white writing, and it was called The Vanishing American. And they taught us that our people were going to die out. And it was sad, but that's too bad. That's just the way it is.
Wow.
So I went home. I told my father about it. Who wouldn't allow us to speak any English in the home?
Mm-hmm.
Only Mohawk. And he said, don't ever believe that. That is not true. And I was crying. But I said, why do I have to go to that school? He says, because they passed a law that if I don't let you go to that school, I will go to jail. And I said, you mean I have to go anyway? He said, yes. But then he gave me some very good advice.
Mm-hmm.
When I was just a small child. He says, go to school. He says... just pass, he said. In other words, don't get educated, he said. Just pass. You understand what he was telling me?
Well, basically, don't get taken in by what everything they're telling you and don't take it as the word. And just do what you have to survive.
What he was saying was always be ogwehunwe, but you have to pass. So when I went to school, I looked at their system and I figured out how to pass, and I did very well.
Mm-hmm.
And all my kids and my grandchildren and everybody, I always tell them the same thing. And they're all doing very well in school because they don't have to change and become whatever it is. They just have to figure out how to pass. What do you think of that?
You got to do what you got to do sometimes. So as far as
that's what my father told me.
So as far
and
as
I did very well in school, I didn't have a hard time with school at all.
Yeah, you got to.
And
you're playing the game.
What?
You have to play the game, basically, which is sad that you have to play the game.
Well, that is. You see, we looked at these people. I was raised as a traditional person.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about them and talked about their ways, you know. And they have no clans, they have no nation, no close family, no allegiance but to themselves and to their rulers over in Europe. They have no borders, they have no bond anywhere other than to finding an opportunity. And now what's happened, after all this time, they're getting resistance to what they did to us.
Mm-hmm.
And the natural world is never, this is what I was told, the natural world is never going to allow us to be uprooted from our birthright. We were always told that. That's what the natural world put us here, and we will never be uprooted, and to the last, even though they tried to kill us all off.
Mm-hmm.
Look at those children that were in that mass grave. Their DNA is in the ground. It went back into the ground. So what we're seeing now is that these people are moving on. You know, they can go anywhere in the world as long as they bring their money.
Right.
But I do, you know, I feel sorry for those people who are going to inherit these people. But they're moving on, and the money they got from us really should be dumped at our feet, so that we can set it on fire.
Right, because you can't eat it.
So no, they can't. I'll tell you what happened in 1922. I don't know if you've ever heard of something called a potlatch.
Potlatch.
On the West Coast, they have such a thing where, you know, let's say a village does really well, which is very rich.
Mm-hmm.
The West Coast is very rich. You know, they have salmon, they've got, you know, a very nice climate, and people there really could live very, very well. And so they would have these potlatches where one village would invite another village, and then they would have giveaways. They're actually giveaways. We all do it, all of us. And so they would give away almost everything. So what happened was the invaders said, look, we can't have that culture here, these giveaways. So they passed a law making it a criminal act for us to give away our stuff. Did you ever hear about that?
That sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, well, it's true. So they had this. So then the people there started going underground and having their giveaways. And I'll tell you, I personally attended one of those giveaways. I went out to the West Coast, and it was on Vancouver Island. And I went to this village, and they dressed me up because I was a guest, and I had danced with everybody. They had feasts. They had, it was huge. And the gifts that they gave, I came back with bags and bags of gifts. And there were, in the dance, there were people that had big piles of money. And they went and they gave money away to people that were invited there. You had to be invited.
Mm-hmm.
And then each village had their own songs that belonged to that village and so on. But anyway, so that's the kind of giveaways they were. They were huge giveaways. And so what happened in 1922 was they caught... This is what drove them nuts. These people on the, made these big, beautiful blankets. They're called button blankets.
Mm-hmm.
And they sewed money all over the blankets. And then they had a ceremony and they set them all on fire. Well, that was the last straw. So they arrested everybody, and those people went to jail for years for doing that. And they made a law outlawing giving these giveaways. So I don't know, have you...
That's sort of... It's interesting.
Check it up, they'll find out that that's what happened.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because destroying U.S. currency, I believe, is a felony charge or something to that effect. Which now you make me wonder if it goes back to that, is why the law was enacted. Hmm.
Well,
because a white person
on the
definitely...
Canadian side, I think. But, I don't know. It might be on the American side.
Huh.
But it was on the West Coast.
Yeah. Interesting.
And my brother, the one that's a lawyer now.
Right.
He was a young guy in the late 50s, early 60s. He was a student, university student, and he got a job on the CNR, Canadian National Railway, that goes across Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a short order cook. So anyway, he worked with another Native guy from this place called Alert Bay, which is on an island off of the West Coast. And the people there had were very, very successful fishermen. And they had these big fleets of, so this guy says, I'm going home, he said. I'm going back to Alert Bay for, I guess, a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, why are you going there? He says, well, we're having the first ever potlatch. And, you know, it was against the law. Now they're going to let us have it again out in the open. So he invited my brother, and my brother went. They drove up there. They drove to, and then you had to take a ferry, and you had to go out to this island. So they had this ceremony, and my brother said he never saw anything like it. He says the whole village was involved. This was in the, I'm talking about the early 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about over 50 years ago. He said people were giving away things, and he said they would run into their homes and they would bring out whatever they had. They had televisions and stuff like that. They would give those away. And he said, the guy that I went with, he ended up giving away his car. He said, we have no transportation to get back to Vancouver. And he said, the government thought that if it was stopped for all those years, then they're not going to go back to it. They'll have forgotten that. But they didn't forget that. We don't forget that. We have to share. You see, that's what's hard
mm-hmm.
for other people, is that we're supposed to share with each other. And we're supposed to be equal to each other. And so this is what I think is very hard for our visitors, is that they don't have that. In other words, if something happens, let's say something happens to me here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a disaster. My family is, you know, they're in great need. I have the right to go to my community, to my neighbors, to anybody, and they have a duty to help me. As a matter of fact, because I'm a member of the Bear Clan, I could go anywhere and find a Bear Clan, and they have a responsibility, they have a duty to help me. If they come here, I will help them. In other words, I don't even know these people.
Mm-hmm.
or they don't know me, but I know their Bear Clan. My door is open. And that's the system that we set up so that we could survive.
Right. Mutual cooperation and basically taking care of each other when needed.
Well, and the other thing that I remember when I was, I'm going back quite a few years, but I'm going back to this elder, this woman, Ganyeta Hawi. She told me something that I always remember. She says, you know that one day we're going to be telling our children that once upon a time there used to be white-skinned people here. Now they're gone. What do you think of that?
I love it. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the way things are going, that what you're saying is something that can definitely possibly happen. I mean, basically, whites will be assimilated into indigenous eventually. As far as population goes.
Yes, because in Canada, the whites are going to be the minority, a minority here in Canada in about 25 years?
Yeah, probably, I would say.
They will. Those are the figures.
39, 'cause of the...
I read that in 1988. They had a report. Those were the demographics. And then you have, for example, in Quebec, 25% of the population are over 65. And every year there's more because they're retiring.
Mm-hmm.
But the birth rate is so low that there's not enough people to take care of those people, the pensioners, the old people.
Right.
There's not enough being born.
Right. And with
the only place where the population is increasing by leaps and bounds is Saskatchewan and Manitoba, and those are native people.
Right. See, my problem is that the population needs to go down dramatically anyway. I mean, basically, the planet, to me, can't support the population that we have. And in my belief, 2/3 of the population have to be gone in order for humanity to be able to survive on the planet. The planet will survive regardless. But there needs to be a massive cut in population in order to survive.
You see, we are never overpopulated the way that the visitors did.
Well, yeah.
We never did that.
No, and that's the whole point. And that's one of the whole points that I always come back to, because, I mean, we came over here and destroyed. I mean, the population, not to say that there weren't disagreements between the different nations and stuff, you're going to have that. But if it's more of a sustainable, the population is what we have, and this is what the amount of people we can sustain. If an older person felt that they were a burden and older and were of no use, you know, they weren't like now. I mean, you keep them alive even if their life is nothing. They're just a vegetable, but you keep them alive because you're afraid to let them die.
Well, you know what? Among us, I'm an elder.
Mm-hmm.
And and our older people are very valued.
Oh, very much so.
I went to see my aunt. She's in her 90s. She's a valuable person. She can see way back, and she can see way into the future. But your people, mm-hmm. they don't value the elders. So what happens? Those elders are alone. They die alone. Nobody visits them.
Yes.
Their mind goes, and they are of no value.
Mm-hmm.
They're not cared for. I see them in these old folks' homes, left there to die.
Yep.
And they can live for a long time, yes.
If you call
but
it living.
Their mind starts to go because nobody goes to see them and says, hey, you know, tell us about this and tell us about that. And what do you remember and how do you see? They don't do that.
No, I mean.
They don't value their elders.
No, I constantly.
And so the elders can't give them the guidance. You know, and they're not, because they're not valued, they're not developing their perceptions.
No, and people don't get it. I mean, I tell kids and young adults and even older people my age, I mean, once they die and that history is gone, you've lost so much and you'll never know what existed, what happened. You know, different
well,
thoughts.
Well, they don't want to know the history.
No, it's, history is boring.
Of the invaders here is brutal, and so they've had to cover it up with lies. So they make decisions all based on a string of lies, and how can they possibly make a valuable decision when it's all based on their own lies?
Well, it's short-term memory, and as far as indigenous people in this country, that's like an illusion. It's like it never happened, and I'm not responsible, therefore I'm not going to think about it, and that's the past. But your past is
your
future.
Well, the dictators are at the top, and they know at the top of the pyramid, and they know what the agenda is, and so as it goes further down, they know less and less and less, and at the bottom, they don't know anything.
I blame the bottom. Because, you know, if you're going to let someone above you tell you what to do and tell you the way things are, I mean, you basically deserve what you get. And I really don't have mercy, I guess, because you have to not physically fight, but at least mentally fight and make yourself aware, because otherwise you're useless, you know. And to always, and we can't always blame the bad people because we let bad people do bad things.
Well, don't forget, the people are being trained,
yes,
in their system to be obedient.
Very much so. God and
so
country.
So when the rulers tell them, look, attack here or pull back, they do that.
And it's amazing.
Because if they don't have an enemy, they're creating some right now, they are will start to attack each other. And that's what we've noticed.
Right.
So they've got laws that keep them in line so they don't attack each other, unless they're told to do that. So, I mean, look at World War One and World War Two. How many white people were killed? They killed each other.
Oh, very much so.
So they're more than willing to do that. So the European rulers have trained these people, and they feel that they're entitled to control everybody, the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
They set up this psychopathic hierarchical system, which is enforced by the military. And look at all the fighting that's going on in Europe right now. The reason why they're having so much trouble, to me anyway, is my opinion, is that Europe has long been a dead land.
Yes.
With no resources.
Correct.
So all the manufacturing and the labor was sourced out. So basically their money really had no backing. But they did have the military. So the Europeans learned how to feed off of other people's labor and resources. So now the parasitical situation where they have to leech off of a host may be coming to an end. They're finding it harder and harder to keep the hosts in line so that they can feed off them. And the way that they maintained that system, the parasitical system, is setting up this banking system and creating money out of thin air to
yes.
pay for it. And so then they were able to turn around and control everything. But now, for the Europeans, the resources are growing further and further away. So they have to find a new way to rip us off. And I think that's why they're having meetings all the time. They're trying to figure out another way, because mm-hmm. they are at their wit's end right now. You know, because capitalism depends on having slaves,
right.
on having captives.
Yep.
Having this relationship of their captives depending on them for their orders and, you know, to be given the right to live, you know.
Right. See, you're basically talking what people around here would call the Illuminati, which is a group of people that basically make the decisions for the world. And majority of people don't believe that anyone's making any choices. They don't believe there's select groups of people out there that determine how you think or what you buy or how world policy is going to be. They don't want to believe that that's possible. That would be called a conspiracy theory here. So basically that would make you sound crazy, because the majority of people don't want to believe that someone is actually being a puppet. Like, you are a puppet and someone's pulling your strings to make you do certain things, because people want to believe that they're independently thinking and doing, you know, their job, or their supporting capitalism or their government. Like, they want to believe that they're doing it on their own. And the same with wars. I mean, basically your stuff is put on the air, makes you hate these people. These people are trying to take away your right to be whatever. And people don't want to believe that they're actually being manipulated. And I think that's...
Well, I think that the rulers, they are quite willing and adept at sucking other people's blood. That goes very far back in history.
Mm-hmm.
And to them, people are sheep.
Yes.
To be preyed on. And maybe the prey, their captives, you know, they're part of it because they're ignorant, they're afraid. You know what I mean?
Ignorance and fear, yes. Like, ignorance is bliss, because if you look around you and actually see what's happening and open your eyes, it's scary and seems hopeless. So to stay ignorant keeps you happy. You watch the TV, you do your programs, you buy things, all that stuff, and you don't look at what's happening to your environment around you and what's happening to you as a person.
Well, of course, you know, the rulers are can give them some kindness by throwing a bone at them.
Exactly.
And then they say, oh, he was nice to me, you know.
Well, and they're always hoping that they're going to do something different. It's like our current President Obama. It's like, you know, he said all these things he was going to do, and people are going, oh, well, he just said that to get elected. And it's like, yeah, but he's doing everything he said. The same with George W. Bush. They told you what they're going to do. They did it, and you're surprised. I mean, you think that they're going to just change their ideas. They're not. You know, and it's like Obama said, you have to get in the streets and basically demonstrate, you know, like they did during civil rights and stuff, to make change. But then since it's their guy in office, they think that he's going to do it. And when he point blank told you, you have to be part of the situation and the solution, people still don't do it because, oh, I don't have time. Or, you know, the people that are doing the Wall Street things, it's like, oh, well, they don't have jobs anyway. No, I mean, they're putting themselves out. You know, you have to put yourself out.
The way the society is created, it isolates all these people.
Yes.
By creating this culture of individualism. In other words, they can be mistreated and you wouldn't know.
Right.
You know, and a lot of these people feel helpless. As a matter of fact, they feel very helpless if that bondage relationship is ended, because they're so used to it.
Well, it's like an abuser being abused by someone, and you tend to want to love the person who's abusing you for some reason. And it's a vicious cycle, and you get stuck in it.
Yeah, and everybody says, well, you know, election time, the tormentors can be changed. But the abusers remind them, they say, vote for me or I'll make you disappear, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like a codependent.
Very, very much so. And then the choices that you get are picked for you anyway. You know,
that's right. There's only two parties, and I call them the Repo-cons and the Demo-cons.
Nice.
But they're run by the same rulers.
Totally. It's a one-party system here in this nation. People just don't want to admit that to
themselves. Well, you have to have a one-party system in the world.
Right. Yeah.
So the wars that they're trying to create is another thing. It's an emotional investment. They train these people. They go out. They do some horrible things to people in other countries. They come back nuts, crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the government constantly reminds them of all these horrible things they did by having Memorial Day, war movies, video games, what have you.
Yes.
So the rulers are always sorting out the thinkers from the non-thinkers. You know, it's a have and a have-not society.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep saying, that's natural. You know, these rulers don't really care about the consequences.
No.
You know, they aren't insane. They say, oh, they're insane. They're not. They have an agenda.
They know what they want. And
yeah.
are attempting to get it. Exactly.
That's right. Now, we have tribal and band councils in our communities, and they are trained to do that to us. And they are looking the other way while corporations like De Beers suck out our resources at Ottawa, Piscat, and Keshachewan.
Right.
They just look the other way, or they help them.
Well, yeah, because it's going to create
jobs.
They'll
buy off the band manager or the tribal manager,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll be the one standing in front of the camera saying, oh, everything's all right, you know?
Yeah.
That's how it's done.
Yep. Divide and conquer.
Greed really knows no bounds.
Nope.
These people end up being the advisors to the government, and you have... And then you in that whole system that you have. I don't like to be so off critical all the time, but
you can't help
you have
it.
So many egocentric, ruthless people out there.
Yes,
playing the game, and then covering it all up. You know what they do? Like that Penn State scandal
mm-hmm.
is a very good example of that.
Right.
That was going on. Everybody knew about it.
Yep.
But they covered it up.
Yeah, because you're a winning team.
Well, whatever the reason is, I don't know.
Right, right.
Sport, what is sports anyway? Did sports ever cure cancer? Did it ever build a home, or did it ever provide food? No, it's a way to distract people.
Yes, and a waste of resources. I mean, distractions are all over. It's a constant. And that's what makes it difficult for most people. But, you know, again, people don't want to see the truth. They will hide from the truth. They'll get glimpses of the truth, and they will feel the pain and the sorrow or whatever and realization of what's going on, and they don't want to see it. They don't want to talk about it. Like the way we're talking now, like if I talk this way at a party, be at a campfire, you know, someone will joke about something, and then I'll start seriously talking about it. I can clear away that fire and nothing flat. Because people really don't want to think about it because it's painful, you know, and they're trying to always escape the pain instead of facing the pain, you know, the problems and the situations.
What are these people going to do? Where are they going to go?
They're not. They're basically, we're going to die.
They're going to gang up like a pack of dogs on each other.
Oh, yeah.
And like what's happening in Europe right now, the larger European nations are ganging up on smaller ones.
Well, and they're blaming the smaller ones for all the problems, like it's their fault. I mean, the United States blaming Greece and all of Europe for the problems. We've created a lot of the problems ourselves. You know, and our country always tries to blame someone else. You know, and then that gives an...
Well, the problems that, if you face up to it... they're becoming the Europe is becoming unviable, and their satellite states like U.S., Canada, and European-controlled nations of South America,
mm-hmm.
They've failed. So, and the reason is, this is my own opinion, of course.
Right.
We indigenous people survived the Holocaust of over 100 million of our people. And we continue to question everything that they're doing according to our ways. So, as I always said, what happens when all the teeth have been pulled out of these old dogs? I'm talking about, you know, the rulers.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to them? Well, they lose their bite. As I say, they can only lap up soft, chewable scraps.
Right. Yeah, you hope that's what it becomes, and they don't lash out like a mad dog before they go down, which they will, you know, but so be prepared for it.
Well, yeah.
and you gotta laugh at it sometimes because it is very overwhelming and crazy, and it's just like, you know, And it is funny in a sick kind of way. You can't help
yeah, it.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's like, all right.
But, you know, we're talking about this secret ruling cabal. And it's the old European bloodline. That's who they are.
Right.
They're trying to take over the world and put in a fascist ruling totalitarian government, New World Order.
Right.
It's being run out of London,
yep.
which is the financial capital of the world.
Yep.
Washington is the military capital, and the Vatican City is the religious capital.
Yeah.
And all these three states have no allegiance to any country.
No.
Except to that bloodline.
Exactly. The bloodline and the family, which is the only
and,
the few family values.
And the dictator
values.
At the top has the agenda.
So what do you think?
Know, as I said, as the power goes down, they know less and less.
Okay, so what do you think of the UN then? United Nations.
Oh, it's that's what you know what I call the UN? The
Please.
International Department of Indian Affairs.
Oh, God. Okay, yeah, I see that. Oh.
That says it all, right?
You basically said it all, yes.
I think some people are saying, we don't, oh, I think it's Syria or someplace. We don't want the United Nations here.
Right, yeah.
Because NATO and the United Nations and this cabal, they work together.
Well, yeah, and everyone thinks that they're the coolest thing going because, oh, look, it's everyone getting together, you know, to bring peace. You know, peace through the barrel of a gun. I don't think that really works. You know, it's like...
But this system that they have, it does... it's got... It's like a spider, you know? It's got a web and tentacles that go way down right to the nations, towns, cities, regions, communities.
Right.
And all their serfs load the guns, fire them,
mm-hmm.
and die for them.
Yep, yep.
And they've been brainwashed through lies, patriotism.
Yep, exactly. And they don't
they
even...
They use flags,
yep.
songs, heroes, holidays, to
yep.
give them this identity as... Whatever it is, whatever their identity is.
Yeah, and it's funny when they make the fake heroes and then they get caught and then it's like no big idea, you know. Total fabrication, this person wasn't a hero at all, this is actually what happened, but yet people don't get outraged, which continuously blows me away. It's like, oh, well, it doesn't happen often. It's like it happens all the time. It's happened all the time, you know, again. Look at your history. Know your past. Your past will show you your future, and people just don't see it.
Well, the people have been made servile, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They're scared.
Yes.
They're insecure, and they have to be that way so it's easier to be for them to be controlled.
Right.
Then the master sent them over here to live on our land, to exploit, to kill us, exploit us, and steal the resources. So these wanderers have been lost ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it takes many forms.
Definitely.
You know?
More forms than you can count. Okay, so...
And the rulers are sitting in there in London, webbing, secretly spinning webs.
Mm-hmm. The web weavers.
Keeping everybody in debt and taxes to keep them under control. And people don't even realize it.
No, not at all. Because they get caught on the treadmill of the capitalist life and can't see anything else. They have their blinders on. And a never-ending circle. So, we have like 15 minutes left. And I would like you to talk about what Mohawk Nation News is all about.com.
Oh, well, Mohawk Nation News, I started that in 1990 during the Mohawk Oka crisis. And if anybody wants to know what that's all about, you can go on YouTube. And there's a few films, but one that comes to mind is Acts of Defiance. That was made by the National Film Board. And it kind of happened, how we were attacked, the army was sent in, you know, 4,500 soldiers were sent to surround us. Three communities. That's Ganawage, Aguzasne, and Ganazadage. And it was because we said, no, you're not going to put your God our burial grounds, our cemetery, and our ceremonial site. So we said, no, you're not going to do it. Anyway, so I started writing articles about what was going on and posting them. Believe it or not, I had to do it by the fax in those days.
Oh, my God.
So it was kind of expensive, but not later on I started to do it by just sending emails out to people. So then eventually I created a website in 2005 in Six Nations. There was a big land dispute there, similar, which is west of Toronto. And so I started writing about it, and basically I'm a writer. So I started the website. And then another big event, another big land claim issue came up at Charlotte Lake. Anyway, so I started writing from the Mohawk perspective,
mm-hmm.
always from the way I see it as a Mohawk, and decipher all of the whatever I saw. And so people liked it. And I ended up getting a very large list of people that I sent this to. And anyway, a few times I was hacked into, crashed.
Really?
And
you must be doing something right.
I had to resurrect the site. And at one point, I couldn't even get the site back up. So this guy in Montreal, a very nice guy, French guy, said, I'll help you, you know. So he got bits and pieces of it. He put it back together for me. So we got it back up. So I got a threat from the government saying that I had to remove these stories about these land claims. And they were all based on... I could back every single thing I ever said. Just like what I've talked to you about, I can back it all. When I tell you about the movement of people to other parts of the world, I can back that up because I have I've dug it all up. But anyway, so what happened was I got a letter threatening me. And so I told this guy that had just he was a server that had put my site back up. And anyway, so he got threatened too. There was nothing they could do about me because I hadn't done anything illegal. So then, I never advocate violence, you know.
No.
I just put out the truth. That's the biggest weapon I've got. So this guy in Montreal phoned me one day and he said, you know, I've just been served in person with this letter that if I maintain Mohawk Nation News, that I will be sorry that I was ever born, basically.
Huh.
I said, oh my God, I can't have them do that to you. You've been so helpful to me. You've been just wonderful to me. I can't, you know, I said, we've got to find some other way. Anyway, we did. So we've put Mohawk Nation News elsewhere on another server. I'm not going to tell you
right.
where it is.
Don't need to know that.
No. But in the meantime, I've had to reconstruct my website. And I've tried to do it, and I got somebody in here to do it, and I don't know, maybe at some point I'll get it relaunched, but the old one is on there, and all the old stories are on there, and I'm still posting the most recent ones.
Okay.
They're still on there, and but the new one will have some new stuff on it, like some videos to give people an idea, and I would you know, I've been a teacher at Concordia University. I was teaching for about 6 years there, teaching the history of indigenous women. And then, anyway, so I've done that. But basically, Mohawk Nation News just comes out of the Great Law of Peace that I entered at Goa. That's where it all comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I whatever issue comes up, I always look at the Great Law, and I look at the natural world. That's the only, that's where my sources, all my sources are coming from that.
Hmm.
And the Great Law, it has to do with the natural world. Does that give you any idea of what I do and who I am?
Yeah, definitely, and I definitely suggest to people to go to MohawkNationNews.com. I've read some of the articles, and they're very interesting, and just getting things from a different perspective than what you're normally used to hearing, because a lot of people don't go looking for this kind of information on their own, and I would highly suggest it just to give you a better understanding of where other people come, and
Well, I hope that I haven't made people get depressed over the situation.
Well, they need to get depressed and then act. I mean, you got to constantly be harping on things in order for people to realize it. Sort of like TV and radio. You know, it's a constant. You have to, you know, and then if people don't believe you, then it is up to them to prove you wrong and prove their point right. You know, and basically by educating yourself and looking and reading and just looking around your environment in your own town, you know.
Well, you know, that's our concern as indigenous people is that the Great Turtle Island was a paradise when they came here.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a complete mess. You know, the environment has been destroyed. And when everybody leaves, who's going to clean it up? It's going to have to be us.
Yes.
You know, and the people that came here, we now realize that it's unnatural for them to look after the land because it's not their land, and they know it's not their land.
Right.
Because the land can't recognize them.
No. I mean, they feel...
You know, the land realizes that these people are temporary and that we... are the real deal. We're the real ones.
Yes.
So it's kind of like an unknown.
Definitely
something
an unknown.
Deadly controls their lives, and they feel helpless.
Yep.
You know?
A lot of people do feel helpless right now. I can guarantee you that. All right. So
That's why they're treating our land so badly. Because they feel helpless.
Continuously.
You know, there's like a hand that controls or imprisons them, you know?
Right. No respect.
Huh?
I said no respect given. I mean, basically takers, taking stuff from the land, not giving anything back to it, or the people whose land it is.
Because they're not from here.
No.
They are.
Exactly.
They don't have roots into the earth like we have.
Well, they want to be disconnected from the earth. That's basically what the European idea is. We control the earth. We are civilized. We are a Christian people. God has told us to, you know, I mean, basically just following rhetoric, but not having the feeling behind it in most cases, or not understanding.
Well, what happens when these people go back to Europe? Do they feel a connection there?
Some do, I guess, that I know, you know, but then it's again, what is your connection? Do you know what the connection is? I don't know. I mean, basically your heritage, you know. Yeah, I don't know. It's a puzzling idea. Okay, so we're out of time, so can you give me some final...
Hey, well, it was a pleasure, and I...
Well, give me some final...
I hope I didn't discourage people.
No. Any final comments?
Pardon?
Said any final comments to leave us with?
Well, the only thing I can say is that I appreciate the courage it's taken you to put me on to let me say these things. because I'm not seen as a, you know, I'm seen as a very dangerous person for saying these things, but I'm not, because everything I've said is truthful, and my energy comes from the fact that 100 million of our people were killed, were murdered, and our resources were stolen, and our land, our birthright, is a complete mess. So I'm hoping that the visitors will start looking at the truth and stop gobbling up all these fantasies that Madison Avenue has created for them, because the meaning of life is fake if it's based on that. You know, what you need is a true meaning.
Yeah, a reality check.
And that's the only message I have. But I want to thank you, because you've shown courage in letting me talk like this. You say that you talk like this anyway.
Yes.
And you've had other people on. But I can, you know, point you to a lot of people who maybe even know more than I do.
Wow.
I can't say I know everything.
Well, I'm definitely...
But I know other people who would be... I talked to them, and they said they'd be willing to come on your show.
And I'm gonna call them up probably in January at this point, and try to get the ones that you gave me their names.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and
Well, you know, so I don't want to discourage people, but you have to... resolve it, and you have to resolve it on the truth. And I think the first step, the very first step, is to recognize and truthfully face up to what happened to the indigenous people, to all our people. Once there's an admission, you know, you can't
right.
go around saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Right.
We don't have that word in our language. It doesn't exist. What we do have is, we did it. I did that. I'm guilty of it. It's inside me. Now I'm going to work for the rest of my life to make that right, what we did. I'm going to do everything I can to right that wrong. And I'm going to respect you, and you're going to Now that's not sorry. That's a completely different concept.
Right. Yeah. More thought, words to live by, basically.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. Since I'm calling outside of my country, according to our laws, that marks me as a terrorist. So from one terrorist to another, I'd like to thank you very much.
I am not a terrorist. Definitely not.
Definitely not. Exactly.
I have never advocated violence, ever. And I never will.
Hear, hear. That's what it's all about. Just speaking the word and getting it out there. All right, well, thank you very, very much for coming on the air and talking with us. This conversation went directions I didn't even expect, which I like that. You surprised me, so that was very good.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, onigi wahi. Ano nyawa.
All right.
Nyawa jiwa humsabe.
All right, have a good day, and good luck, and take care.
Don't say luck.
Don't
That's
say...
chance.
Luck is chance.
I worked in a casino one time. There's no such thing as luck. The house always wins. Onigi wahi.
Nice. All right. Take care and have a great day.
Okay. Ona.
Right. And you're listening to WMRWLP War 95.1 FM. Oh, that was great. I liked it. I enjoyed myself. Well, see, and as she's saying, acknowledge what, as this country has done to the indigenous people time and time again. Don't say you're sorry. Sorry is a word that I personally despise. It doesn't really say anything. It's something that you just say because you think it would be a nice thing to say. You know, someone dies. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, we had problems with this and I'm sorry. You know, it's like, basically, as she says, bring it inside, make it a part of you, and do something about it. And that's one thing as a nation we can't do. We go around the world slaughtering and murder. And murder, the word she used, is the proper word. Not freedom fighters or peacekeepers. Peacekeepers promoting peace by slaughter. It makes no sense to me. But for some reason, we like to do that over and over. And we have yet to learn to stop spreading peace and love through the barrel of a gun. You know, and things she said could have been harsh and stuff, but reality hurts. And once you can get out of that haze of illusions and feel the pain of reality, it gets better from there. But you gotta make the jump. And the preceding program represented the opinions of producer and participants and did not represent the views of WMRW LP or its license holder Roots Work.